Americans have discovered food in a way that the French have known about it for years. And so you do, like I said, the word terroir is coming into existence. There's all this locavore thing. There's a discovery of what they call heirloom fruits and vegetables, which nobody even thinks that way here. Well, I guess they do to some extent. I do see tomate ancienne in the market, and that, I guess, translates into heirloom tomatoes. You know, it's just something that people have always done.
This time on Plutopia News Network's 20 Minutes into the Future, part two of our interview with veteran journalist and critic Ed Ward on the future of food.
I wanted to talk to you about one of your other fascinations, food. I know you've written about food and you've turned me on to food. And I was last night, interestingly enough, in a 3-hour conversation about the future of food and specifically the future of turkey, of all things. What's going on with food in Europe right now?
Well, there's a huge movement. Well, it's not even a movement. It's a done thing that none of this genetically modified stuff is going to be allowed onto the continent. They're terrified of it, you know, getting loose, as it has in the States. So that's one thing. And then another thing has been an increased attention to the carbon footprint of foods, which is actually less of an issue, especially in France. I mean, God, when I go down to the market, as I hope I'll be able to do tomorrow morning, the products down there, the vegetables and such, are not labeled France. They're labeled with the exact town or village where it's grown, so that the people who are shopping know just how local it is. Now, the downside of that is that it's very difficult to find foreign food, foreign restaurants, foreign products, unless there's a population to support it, i.e. it's fairly easy to find Maghrebi groceries if you just go over to the Arab part of town and shop in one of their stores. But it's really difficult to find Chinese groceries because there are no Chinese people. But as far as the carbon footprint thing, when it comes to food and vegetables and fruit and meat, it's always been like that. The French speak of terroir, which is the a word that's now coming into use increasingly in the United States, which is the concept, which I believe very deeply in, that you can taste the place where something has been raised. And so I have kept to almost exclusively a local diet since I've been here. Not so much out of intellectual curiosity as because it's cheaper to do that. I go down to the market and these farmers, you know, they sell their stuff cheap because it's ripe. They couldn't put it on a truck. I mean, sure, they came over from, you know, down the road, and it took them an hour and 45 minutes to get there. But man, that stuff doesn't have too many more days in it. You know, it's not treated in any sort of way. Most of it's organically grown and it has to be consumed quickly. And I like that, you know, because terroir is also a concept that applies to wine. And I'm in the largest wine producing area of France. And as you would imagine from that, a lot of the wine that's produced here is terrible, or it's used for blending or, you know, other sorts of purposes. And in fact, the EU has ordered the vineyards to rip out a certain number of their vines to reduce the amount of surplus wine that's around, rather than turning it into biofuel, because, of course, the corn lobby has a great deal of influence in Brussels, unfortunately. I think it would be wonderful to turn all this excess wine into you know, gasoline or whatever biofuel. It's a whole lot easier to do when you're starting with wine. But anyway, the taste of the wines, I think, marries well with the landscape and all that other stuff. And it's been really fascinating discovering this. And I did see a bit of this happening in Berlin, although to some extent, Germans have a fear of food, which is really, really abnormal and unfortunate. And also the local cuisine is not very subtle and it's not very healthy. It's way oversalted and there's a lot of fat in it, which in the depths of winter is something you want, but they don't have seasonal cuisine in Germany. It's always the same thing. You'll be getting your roast pork in August as well as in January.
Can you expand on that fear of food? What do they fear about it?
It's bad for you. You have to take it in, but it's bad for you.
Interesting.
I don't get it, man. But, you know, every year there was a headline which would appear in one of the tabloids where some kids who were at a summer camp all went down with food poisoning. And they did that because, I mean, the tabloids love to run stories that confirm people's fears, you know.
Oh, yeah.
If a Turkish guy went on a rampage with a rifle and killed a bunch of people, then, boy, they wouldn't let that go for a week because that's what everybody in the right-wing tabloid-reading universe wants to believe the Turks are all about. Unfortunately, the Turks, unfortunately for the tabloids, Turks don't do that kind of thing. So they don't get that story. But, boy, oh, boy, you know, the whole idea is like, is it safe? Is it safe? That's the larger issue. Germans are obsessed with safety, just obsessed with it. And because they don't want to make a mistake. They don't ever want to be wrong. And so the idea that food, that anything that's different, it's probably dangerous. I had a friend who said, oh, you know, I'm not a vegetarian anymore. I even eat beef. I said, oh, that's, you know, that's a step in some direction anyway. She says, oh, but not ground beef, because that's very dangerous.
That's said, interesting. Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the main way people take beef in this country.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, that's, once again, prejudices that people, sometimes when people hear me, when people know I'm an American, they'll bring a bottle of ketchup to the table.
Well, here in Austin, Texas, restaurants are packed, totally packed all the time. Is it like that there?
Well, I'm going to find out because it's 8:15 at night and I'm going to have to go out tonight because my landlord still hasn't gotten a plumber up here and I can't wash the dishes. This is also the night that the Beaujolais Nouveau comes in and I guess people will be out swilling that junk. But the French are very proud of their culinary traditions, and yeah, they love to go out to restaurants, but they all only go out to French restaurants. There really aren't very many foreign restaurants. There's a few Moroccan restaurants because that really is a great cuisine, and to some extent, French people have had vacations over there in Morocco. They get hooked on the cuisine. I still don't know any good Moroccan restaurants here, but I'm sure there are some.
You get any decent barbecue there?
No. Thank you for torturing me. No.
I'm sorry. Well, I've been rather surprised at the hyperactivity around restaurants here. And I mean, there was a time when the best way to lose money was to open a restaurant. And now seems to be a money-making proposition here.
Well, I don't know. That's a whole nother issue. But one thing is Americans have discovered food in a way that the French have known about it for years. And so you do, like I said, the word terroir is coming into existence. There's all this locavore thing. There's a discovery of what they call heirloom fruits and vegetables, which nobody even thinks that way here. Well, I guess they do to some extent. I do see tomate ancienne in the market, and that, I guess, translates into heirloom tomatoes. But, you know, it's just something that people have always done. People are very proud about their local foods. I did a blog piece recently about some black turnips that I'd bought in the market. Hmm. And these turnips have their own website, and they've got their own protective organization. And I mean, they're turnips, for Christ's sake. But people are really like that. And where you really get down to it is cheese. I know a young cheesemaker who comes to the markets sometimes, not all the time. Right now, I guess it's production season, so he hasn't been for a couple of months in the market. But he's very proud of the fact he's a third-generation cheesemaker, and he only makes stuff that's indigenous to his part of the world, in Aveyron. And he's got a cheese called Sarl, which is very much like cheddar. And then he's got another one called Laguiole, which is made in the village of Laguiole, where the chief industry is very famous knives. I've been to a couple of the really fancy cheese shops here in town. They don't have Laguiole. He said, the first time I met him, he says, this is extremely rare, and you need to taste it, because I'm one of the few people who sells it in this part of the country.
Hmm.
And so, you know, but this is not unusual behavior for as far as anybody here is concerned. You know, I say, oh, you know, I just got a really nice hunk of Laguiole from this guy in the market. Oh, I've always heard that's good. And you know, there's people are really, they're connoisseurs. It's real interesting to me. And it's also very much the way I think. So I'm not, it feels better after, you know, watching my friend and her fear of hamburger and the low quality of food in the stores in Berlin. One time I was back in Austin, a friend of mine worked in the vegetable department at Whole Foods, and he was taking down some lettuce. And I said, what are you doing? He says, oh, this is going off to the zoo. You know, we can't sell this anymore. I looked at it, I said, man, I would pay good money to know where I could get lettuce that looked that good in Berlin. It's really true. People just accepted a very low standard there. I, like I said, this may be changing, but it hadn't changed 2 years ago when I moved.
Well, just as a final question this morning, I'm wondering if you see any food trends over the next 5 years or so, things that you think are going to be happening.
Well, I see them in the States, or I don't see them because I don't go to the States that often, but I see people on the well and on Facebook talking about stuff. And I think that the trend is that places are going to become more like France already is, that there's going to be a respect for local products. There's going to be a respect for local traditions. I already saw that in California years ago. With a guy named Bradley Ogden, who was basically doing American food, roast beef, mashed potatoes, but really good. You know, it's like, so your mother was a sloppy cook. Mine was. She just loved to haul something out of a can or out of the freezer.
Yeah.
Because she had been liberated from this arduous process. So now we have machines that help us with the arduous process, like food processors and microwave ovens and improved things like rice cookers that can handle whole grains and stuff. So you don't really have to spend all that much time, and you can concentrate more on the end product. So I think that's something that's really happening. There's one of my idols in the food writing business is one of the also least successful, a guy named John Thorne, who has a website called Simple Cooking, which I would really recommend, and also a bunch of books, which you can buy from my Amazon gizmo on my blog. But books like Pot on the Fire and what's the name of his latest one? Because he did a conversation on the well about it. But his whole thing has always been a respect for the ingredients and a respect for finding the best way to make something. His scope is largely American, but he also does a lot of international. I know the name of his new book is Mouth Open Wide. New, it's several years old. But he works very slowly, and he's very focused. And I believe that, you know, the John Thornes of the world are one of the major trends that are going to happen. And that in America, there will be this appreciation for local ingredients, local culinary traditions. We've also seen that actually come up quite a bit in Britain and Ireland in recent years. It's been a lot of these celebrity chefs on the British scene are actually people who have revived old culinary traditions and brought them up to date, you know, less fat, less processed gunk in it. And I think that's basically very very optimistic.
I'm looking at John Thorne's website, the Simple Cooking website, and I noticed that his URL is outlawcook.com.
Which he was when he started 30 years ago, because he was going against the whole Julia Child haute cuisine thing. And he was rebelling against that. He was a guy from Maine, for Christ's sake. He'd grown up in one of the most impoverished states of the Union, but one which had wonderful resources in terms of what was available to them, you know, maple sugar and potatoes and a huge amount of seafood. And so he began by learning very small things, like how do you make a corn cake? And what are the different kinds of American corn cakes, Johnny cakes, hoe cakes, flapjacks, that can be made out of corn? What is cornbread? Looking at these things and exploring them. And I think that sort of consciousness is on the rise, at least in the first world. And I think to some extent, the second world, places like Singapore, Vietnam and China, they're beginning to pick up on this and at least send it to tourists, and thus enhancing the image of the country worldwide.
Are you currently writing about food anywhere?
Well, on my blog, yes. I've been having a great deal of trouble selling anything to anybody since I moved here. And I actually pitched a travel page at a major American newspaper, which I won't name, and said, you know, would you like some stories from the Languedoc-Roussillon part of France? And the woman wrote back, she said, I don't know why we should write articles about places we've never heard of. I had to bite my tongue, and I didn't want to piss her off. My immediate reaction was, oh, damn, I thought this was what newspapers were for.
There's a slow food movement here. You know about that.
There's one here. I get emails from this guy, Igor Gurevich, who's the, you know, guru of it in Montpellier. I get an email from him almost every day, and often with photographs he's taken of the food he's eaten. And, boy, is that painful. I can't afford to join them, and as a very small number of people. But he was at this tomato festival, not this past summer, but last summer, and that's where I met him and signed up for his mailing list and so forth. And once again, there's something that they do in France. I'm sure that over in Pardillon, they have a turnip festival for their famous turnips, and certainly in Clapier, they have a tomato festival, and there's another one a little further north, and you just not only get to look at and buy tomatoes, but the ability to learn about them is there. Yeah, I just think people are going to start doing that more in the States, and God knows they already do it here.
Oh, this is funny. So I'm signing up. I'm signing up for the newsletter at the Slow Food site.
Mm-hmm.
And when I do that, I failed to click the privacy consent, and I got an error message in French. So this must be the guys that you're talking about. This must be a site that's based in France.
Slow Food is actually based in Italy.
Italy?
Started in Italy, and I saw it.
Maybe that was Italian.
10 or 15 years ago, when I took a trip to Italy, and there were these restaurants that had snails, little snail logo on them. And it turned out that some people that the woman I was down there with knew owned one of them. And it was a slow food restaurant. And I thought, oh, this is such a good idea. And then I discovered that there were chapters in Germany. And in fact, one of the slow food German chapters put out this 1,400-page book of restaurants and wineries in Italy that met the slow food requirements. So yeah, it's happening. It's happening all over the States. It tends to be a very elitist sort of thing, though. I mean, it's definitely at the high end of the movement that Mark Bittman is promoting through the New York Times, which is a lot more of a bourgeois product. And good, because, you know, if the poor and middle class people don't get onto this, then it really is only a toy for rich people. Here, everybody does it. And part of the reason they do it is because it's cheaper to buy good food than to buy bad food.
We were talking last night about the question of whether really good food is going to become a sort of an elite thing, you know, whether only the elite will be able to afford truly good food.
Nah, you know, not if producers are willing to work with large-scale retail, or not if the idea, I mean, when first time I ever went by, I took a train to Washington, D.C., and the train got stopped in Baltimore on an overpass waiting for something to go by, and I saw this cart, really colorful cart, drawn by a horse. And it was loaded down with vegetables. I asked somebody about that later and said, oh, those are called Arabs. And it's a vegetable guy who goes through the black neighborhoods selling fruit and vegetables. And these people have pretty much disappeared. But the idea of doing a farmer's market in a economically depressed neighborhood, you know, that's hardly very radical. The Arabs were here before... And Italian and Jewish street peddlers in New York, you know, were there before the supermarkets, and even during the time of the supermarkets.
I was talking to somebody yesterday about having a food mandala. They do this thing every year in Austin where they create this massive sort of mandala of food. And then at the end of the day, you know, it's sort of like the Buddhist thing of the sand mandala. Right. It's impermanent. At the end of the day, they gather up the mandala and hand it over to the food bank. The food bank weighs it, how many tons of veggies they have in this mandala, and cart it off to give it to people who can't afford to buy vegetables, you know?
Well, that's a one-off type of thing. The thing that needs to be done is, and actually is being done in places like New York, is that the state has set up farmers markets for farmers to sell fresh produce in poorer neighborhoods. I'm totally think that's wonderful. It certainly happens here, and it needs to be, more people need to look into how to do that. Because, you know, eating and being healthy is not restricted to one social class.
Well, Ed, we really want to thank you for joining us today. This has been a fascinating conversation.
Right now, the conversation is, it's 8:30 in the evening here.
And you're hungry.
I'm hungry, and I can't cook, so I've got to go find a place that's not jammed with people swilling that horrible chemical-tasting Beaujolais Nouveau and find a little seat, sit in it, and get something to eat.
You've been listening to an interview with veteran journalist and critic Ed Ward. With John Lebkowski, I'm Scoop Sweeney. This is the Plutopia News Network, 20 minutes into the future.